Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinathi Kuma. Joining me to wrap this week up are independent analyst Jimmy Muyaha and Jacobus Brink from Novara. Thank you very much to the both of you for joining us. It's been a very volatile week for the markets. Jimmy, just starting with you, what are investors' main concerns right now?
Well, I mean, first of all, inflationary pressures, global inflationary pressures, the ongoing tension that we've been seeing in Russia and Ukraine are still a factor. But I think overall, at the moment, inflationary pressures coming out of the U.S., coming out of Europe and in South Africa in particular as well. I mean, we saw our central bank increasing interest rates off the back of their inflationary concerns there as well. And I think these overall pressures are feeding into a greater narrative that there's a possibility even ever so slightly, that we might still head into a global recession. We might still see the U.S. kickstart that recession with Europe following close behind. But these inflationary pressures are feeding themselves into fuel prices, into consumer spending, and into everything else. And so from an investor sentiment point of view, with the central banks making key decisions in line with that, we're seeing equity markets are taking a bit of a hit off the back of that. And we're also seeing that currency markets as well are reacting to what the central banks are doing in their decision making.
Jacobus, on your side, what are you most cautious about right now as an investor? And what are you most excited about?
Yeah, no, I think I'll actually agree with Jimmy. You know, I think inflation is starting to become a real concern. I mean, we saw numbers out of Germany this morning. Their PPI was up 33% year on year. I mean, that's just crazy type of numbers. And I think, you know, in conjunction with that, what the market is starting to price is definitely for slower growth. You know, so those are definitely the two main concerns, you know, whether we are going to, you know, go into a stagflationary environment, like some people are concerned about, remains to be seen. But yeah, definitely inflation and growth, the growth outlook, are both very, very worrying at this stage. I think if I had to pick something that I have to be excited about is, the possibility of, getting generational low opportunities to buy some of the names that we really like for the long term, you know, especially in the tech sector. I think we've seen some real massacres there at this stage. So, you know, I do think, you know, if we do go into a bit of a slowdown, inflation keeps on, you know, being sort of slightly out of control. You know, if we've got sort of a bit of dry powder on hand, I think it really would be a very, very good buying opportunity for some of these names.
All right, let's go into some questions that came out today from viewers. So Richemont coming out with results, excellent results. The share price dropping. Can the panel please share their view on why the drop, Jimmy?
Sure. I mean, if you remember, Richemont, in the last set of results prior to this, actually announced that their biggest growth market and their most profitable growth market was the Chinese market. And that's where they saw a large part of their profits coming from. And now they've outlined that their forecast going into the rest of the reporting period and going forward is actually not looking good for that Chinese market. So the outlook and the outlook forecast going forward is not something that, or is something that's giving investors a concern. We saw the share price trading very volatile today. It's down about 11% at the moment. And that, again, is largely off the back of the forward-looking numbers rather than how good they did perform.
And how do you, your take on the performance, what are some of the key metrics that you were looking at?
Well, I mean, a reporting perspective, I mean, their earnings were good. Their revenues were up. I mean, we did see that in their pandemic time, or as I said, the last reporting period when they did report that the Chinese growth market was its largest, the revenues that they've reported since then are still in line with those expectations. And we did see in the last reporting that they did outline that forecast was to continue at least up until this period. So for them to now be concerned around going forward and looking at potential profits and that coming down from that perspective means that they have to now tap into other markets. They have to go back to Europe and see if they can increase their revenues from the European markets, the Swiss markets, and the South African market, as small as it is.
Indeed, we are starting to see the impact of the China situation now filtering in through to companies. Just another question from a viewer for you, Yokobus. Can anyone explain the reasoning behind SA domiciled shareholders being eligible to participate in the BHP Woodside merger?
Basically, it comes down to, I do think, in fact, just on my personal view, I do think that South African shareholders are, you know, bearing the brunt of the decision that was made. But anyway, so it basically comes down to where the shareholders are registered or, you know, in which country they are registered in. So they've sort of released a list of countries that would just receive 5.5 or whatever Woodside shares for every BHP shares. And South Africa is not one of those countries. One of the main reasons for it is because of exchange controls. So South African investors can actually participate in it, but they need to indicate to BHP out of their own accord that they would like to, you know, that they are registered for, you know, that they can actually invest in offshore domiciled companies. And they need to sort of, the onus is on them to actually indicate it to BHP that they can actually partake in it. In the case that they do not, you know, in the case of smaller investors or investors that can't take any money outside of the country, they'll basically set up a sale facility where, you know, all of those shares will just be sort of piled up. I think JP Morgan's running with that book. And, you know, depending on how they decide to actually, there's no sort of real guidance on how they decide to distribute, you know, the proceeds from the sale of those shares to investors. So it could be, you know, that they decide to have a bit of a book build first and, you know, the share price might go down. And at the end of the day, you know, the dividend, the cash dividend that smaller investors are going to receive will be reliant on what the sale price is, you know, for those shares. So it definitely is a bit of a negative one for investors, smaller investors in Africa that can't partake in it. But once again, I think the deadline to indicate that to BHP is the 26th of May. So that's next week, Thursday. So investors still can, of their own accord, you know, indicate to BHP that they would like to and are able to partake in the distribution of those shares.
All right. So yesterday there was that vote where Woodside shareholders voted for this merger with BHP's petroleum arm, of course, due to be a major oil and gas producer. An interesting comment that came out from a proxy for a shareholder there asking whether the company's plans to invest in fossil fuels were morally mad, economically mad, or both. With that, the chairman replied, or neither. Jimmy, how are you looking at investing in companies that are concentrating on fossil fuels at this point?
Well, I mean, the reality is that if you look at the fossil fuel use within the world at the moment, fossil fuels are still about 70 to 80% of the used fuels around the world, and that hasn't decreased much in the last 10 years. We have seen an increase in companies pursuing more ESG initiatives, pursuing greener and cleaner energy initiatives, and trying to basically become carbon neutral companies. But I think the reality at this stage is that to say to a company the size of BHP and in the landscape that we're in at the moment that they should not be using fossil fuels at all is a bit of a stretch. And I think if the companies are on the right track from an ESG perspective, I mean, we know companies like BP and Anglo are sort of very focused on their ESG plans and their zero carbon emission plans by certain dates. We know from a motoring perspective, car manufacturers like Audi are in the same boat where they want to be carbon neutral by a certain period, maybe in the next 5 or 10 years. And I think that type of focus from a company's perspective is probably where investors are going to be looking at. At least it's where activist investors have been looking at in recent times, is reducing the carbon footprint rather than trying to push for zero fossil fuel usage at this stage.
All right, let's go on to another question. There wasn't much excitement on the Vodacom results on Monday. What's the panel's view on the stock, Yakubis?
Yeah, my sort of view on Vodacom is, I'm actually fairly sort of positive on the business going forward. I think they, with the recent acquisition of Vumatel on the fiber side, I think that's sort of where the future of that industry is. And with Vodacom being sort of the leader in that space, I think there's a lot of excitement, possibly going forward. You know, whether it was reflected in their most recent results. Yeah, I suppose not anything really to get majorly overly excited about, but I think the outlook for them, I mean, they are still South Africa's, the largest mobile telecommunications company. So I do think with some of the guidances we did get, I think there might be some interesting things in the pipeline going forward.
Another question from the same viewer. Should Vodacom shareholders be concerned that the company will reduce dividends to fund growth, Jimmy?
I don't think at this stage. I think at this stage, Vodacom is fairly well capitalized. They've got a lot of big guys or strategic thinkers at the moment. I mean, the CEO and his team have been able to maintain the outlook up to this point. I think my caution for Vodacom at the moment is, much as I agree with Jacobus that they are the leading guys in the space and they are outlining certain strategic things, I think my concern with them is they're becoming a bit sluggish when compared to a competitor like MTN, who is cheaper than they are on data prices, is expanding rapidly into the African market and is dominating countries like Nigeria and Kenya where they operate, and Rwanda where they operate even more heavily than Vodacom. So I think Vodacom, in adjusting their strategy, needs to be aware of their competition and take more stock of their competition if they want to be able to continue to offer their customers the most competitive return or their investors the most competitive return. If you look at MTN's share price performance for the last 12 months relative to Vodacom's, you can see there once again MTN is outperforming Vodacom by quite a stretch. So I think for Vodacom at the moment, it's less about a lower dividend and more about being able to continue to remain attractive to existing shareholders and investors.
On that point, Jacobus, would you rather go as bullish as you are on Vodacom, but would you rather go for Vodacom or MTN?
No, I mean, I agree 100% with what Jimmy said, and it is a difficult one. You know, I do think, Vodacom, in my opinion, has always been, or at least for the past few years, the most boring of the two, and I think they've sort of realized that to some extent. Whether they can pull it off remains to be seen, but if you had to push me, I'd probably go put my money on Vodacom.
Some big news today was coming out of the US retail sector. So Target and Walmart coming out with a bad quarter with struggles at the back end, really struggling with high cost supply chain issues and inventory struggles. Jimmy, I think Target was down like even Walmart about over 20%. Did they deserve the kind of clobbering that they got with the share price?
Do you know what? At this point, it's very difficult to say who deserves what and who doesn't. I mean, we've seen the tech sector take a beating. We've seen the local hospitality sector take a beating in South Africa. We're in uncharted territory for some of these stocks. Jacobus mentioned at the start of the show that this is the best time to be loading up on some of these big stocks, and I couldn't agree more. We will see that rebound. We will see that turnaround. It's just a matter of where investors have been. I mean, if you look at the U.S.'s situation, just remember that the U.S., there were stimulus packages that went out. Consumers had excess amount of savings. Those savings are now no longer, or the stimulus packages are no longer part of their budgets. The savings are now in question. Consumer spending is still at an all-time high in the U.S., despite the fact that those stimulus checks have stopped. So the fact that consumers were able to pile into the stock markets during the pandemic was a great sign for them. But now a lot of those investors, one, cannot continue to do that from a retail perspective, or two, have made their returns and feel that this is the best time to pull out their money. I mean, for those that have lost some money at this stage as well. Also looking at the market to say, maybe I must just pull out the little that I do have left, because we're not going to be getting more stimulus checks from the US, and maybe we must just wait and see how the markets recover. I mean, we've seen some insane volatility from stocks, not only stocks, commodities as well, as I said, currencies earlier. So overall, the consensus within the market from a retail investor sentiment is be as conservative as possible, take profits where you can, cut losses where you can, and that might fuel more fear and panic than reasonable thinking. I mean, we've definitely seen that happen within markets like the crypto space. And so for me to sit and say that guys like Walmart and Target were warranted to be down 20% would be a bit unfair on retailers like that, because they probably did perform fairly well, and it's just a bit of panic setting into the market.
Yeah, indeed, you're right. We're coming from a really high base where now there are no more stimulus checks, and this is a really unusual environment with all these inflation being exogenous. Yagwebis, on your side, how are you feeling about the US retail sector?
Yeah, I know. You know, I agree. Having obviously coming, you know, it came off a very, very high base. You know, my view is much more pessimistic. You know, I think every time you hear Chair Powell speak at press conferences, and a lot of the other Fed members, you know, they keep on referring to the US consumer being very strong. I think we are actually starting to see the US consumer, you know, that all of that strength that they're referring to turn around. I think what happened was, you know, obviously over the past 2 years with all the stimmy checks and everything, you know, they had cash that they could spend. They're still spending, but I think most of that's being spent on credit now. And with the rates going up in the US, I think they're sort of setting themselves up for a really, really tough time. So I'm actually of the view that the reason why we saw such large selling in the names like Target and Walmart is I think people were starting to really, really aggressively price in a much weaker consumer. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a lot of that selling being institutional selling, because I'm pretty sure if you look at some of the retail, you know, still some of the numbers coming out, you know, from market makers and everything in the US, you know, retail investors still seem to be buying all the dips, you know.
Yeah.
So no, I've got a very, very bearish view on the US consumer. And I mean, you know, that obviously going to feed through into the US economy as a whole.
It's quite interesting, your guys' views on the US consumer. And this is the kind of confusion that I'm getting from even a lot of market participants, even actually with the CEOs of Target and Walmart. The Target CEO, you know, spoke of a fairly healthy consumer, just that, you know, they're spending differently. Walmart was a little more pessimistic on the health of the US consumer. And then you get retail sales coming out, kind of signaling that the consumer is still okay. So you look at these retailers and they're also reluctant to pass on those costs to the consumer. Jimmy, is this just about market share?
No, this is concern from the retailers as well. I mean, much as we are seeing retail investors and retail consumers behave very differently, I agree with Jacobus, is that your health of the retail consumer, and this is not the first time that the US Fed may have gotten it wrong. The last time they got it wrong, they got it wrong in a big way. So for them, it's in their best interest to continue to provide confidence to the market that the retail consumers are healthy, that the U.S. economy is recovering, that jobs numbers are looking good, that the wage growth rate is looking great. It's in their best interest because it avoids a U.S. recession. If we head into a U.S.-led recession, which more and more indicators are pointing towards that, I mean, Jacobus's point around the fact that the health of the consumer is not looking good. You're seeing institutions as well seeing that, and they're preparing for a sell-off. And we've always seen that where institutional investors prepare for a sell-off, it's always a big sell-off, and they protect themselves before they protect the retail consumer. So I think the state of the U.S. at the moment is one of the Fed saying one thing for the health of the economy and for the protection of the economy, and the numbers that come out and the stats that come out, be it unemployment numbers, be it CPI numbers, be it wage growth rates, those numbers don't exactly line up with what the US Fed is saying. And the more they don't line up, the more nervous institutional investors are getting, and the bigger that likelihood of that sell-off being triggered is looking.
Yeah. Let's go on to the South African consumer. Pick n Pay came out with results this week, also saying that they're so looking at, you know, the inflation, raising prices by 2.9% versus food inflation at 6.2%. I'm just wondering how much longer then they can go on or they can continue to absorb these costs. Jacobus.
Yeah, you know, that I think really remains to be seen. I think, you know, obviously, having listened to the SARB yesterday, you know, having increased their expectations on inflation as well, you know, we're going to reach a point where these companies just can't, you know, continue doing that. But in the same breath, you also have to start to feel for the consumer. I mean, fuel costs being almost through the roof. We heard about another massive hike at the beginning of the next month, food inflation also starting to come through. I mean, at some stage, unfortunately, they're going to have to start passing this on to the consumer, and then, you know, we're just going to go into sort of almost a death spiral, if you will. You know, the consumer's just going to be worse off and worse off. Fuel's going up, everything's just going up, inflation's out of control. I don't think for too long. I'm not very optimistic about that one either.
All right. Pick n Pay, saying that they've done some soul searching and they're implementing the shakeup, with a strategy to split itself into three banners. Jimmy, what do you make of this rejig?
Do you know, I think, much like we spoke about Vodacom versus MTN earlier, I think this is a story of Pick n Pay versus ShopRite. Mm-hmm. ShopRite has been doing this. ShopRite has been leading and outperforming Pick n Pay, and Pick n Pay for the longest time has been playing catch up. They did announce, of course, that they want to open up another 200 Boxer stores over the next 3 years. They announced that Project Red to target a different segment with a smaller amount of products than the standard Pick n Pay. But again, for me, it comes down to their ability to implement this. To announce something that's going to compete with a segment of the ShopRite group that is already established means that you're already starting from a base of a disadvantaged point of view in that your competitor is already ahead of you there. So one, you're playing catch up in that respect. Two, your value proposition needs to really stand out for consumers in the current market to then say, okay, we are now no longer going to consume what has already been in the market that we know and have tested and now come over to your products. Pick n Pay, while it does have its own brand and its established customer base and that sort of thing, I still feel as though ShopRite's control over their value chain is still presenting itself as a unique competitive advantage over Pick n Pay, because it allows them to keep those costs down, as we just spoke about how it's very important to be able to keep those costs down for the consumer, to keep the consumer coming into your stores. Mm-hmm. I think Pick n Pay, in their soul searching, may have come across a right formula. And it's a formula that certainly worked for ShopRite.
Yeah.
But whether or not this is the right time to implement the formula remains to be seen.
Quite interesting there. There's a question from a viewer. May I please have the panel's view on Sasol and EOH? I hold both stocks, with Sasol on the profit side and EOH at 30% loss. Will it be wise to average down my EOH? I'll give you each of these. So, Jacobus, Sasol, and Jimmy, I'll give you EOH. Jacobus, your view on Sasol?
Yeah, you know, I think Sasol, the most recent sort of performance update, they came out with fairly decent operational performances. You know, we saw an improvement in some of their mining operations, which were good. They're still sitting a little bit with some of the weather and the flooding that inhibited some of their chemical exports, which is obviously an issue. But I mean, that's still not their core business, so it will have an impact on their earnings. The other thing, obviously, it's still the rail infrastructure. You know, that still remains to be seen when that'll be up and running again. So that's something of a concern. So, you know, despite the fact that we'll have that negative impact on headline earnings per share from the chemical side of it, you know, the full year headline earnings per share has been revised upward. I think with commodity prices, obviously where they are and where they are possibly going, and the rand weakening, you know, I still think we could see some upside there. You know, the stock's currently trading at about I think it's 6.5 PE, and a forward dividend yield of 5%. You know, so I don't think it's quite the right time to sell yet,
All
so I'd
right.
still hang on to that one for now.
Yeah. Jimmy, I'm sorry about your age. We'll have to pick it up another time. We're running out of time. We have to go into your stock picks. Your stock pick for today?
My stock pick is Baidu. Jacobus mentioned earlier that the best time to pick up these giants, whether they're tech giants or other sector giants, is when the market is exactly the way it is now. Baidu's down 65% or so. They're reporting numbers next week. And for the last 11 consecutive quarters, they've beaten estimates. They're basically the second biggest search engine after Google. They have 72% market share in China. And they are on the right side of the Chinese regulator. And that's the most important reason, is because we've seen just how volatile the Chinese regulatory structures can be and how the Chinese Communist Party and how the government have come down, clamped down on the tech sector in the last couple of months. And yes, it is a bit risky to go the route of a Chinese tech stock. But if you look at tech stocks across the board, whether you're looking at US stocks, Chinese stocks, European tech stocks, all tech stocks are down. I like where Baidu's pricing is at the moment. I'd like to see them come down just a bit more, possibly about $10 more, but I'm liking Baidu.
Quite interesting that you say that it's on the right side of that tech crackdown. Of course, we have seen authorities trying to saying that they will ease, that burden and try to support the tech sector. But at the same time, I feel like the long-term policy remains the same. On your side, Yogobus, a stock pick?
My stock pick, even though I'm sort of very much leaning towards what Jimmy just said, I thought I'd stay local because I usually come out with global stock picks. So mine for today is actually Sanlam,
All right.
and it's quite ironic that I've said Sanlam before a few weeks ago, and it's actually currently trading at exactly the same price it was then.
All right.
So still bullish on Sanlam, that it's well capitalized, solid balance sheet, all of those things. I'm excited about the Allianz partnership. I think that could possibly take them to a new level. Santam's still there. You're getting that when you buy the Sanlam stock. So no, definitely Sanlam again. It's as I mentioned, we're getting another buying opportunity now after having rallied quite strongly. So Sanlam it is.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, to the both of you for joining us. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, Jacobus Brink from Novara and independent analyst Jimmy Muyaha from Izinati Guma and the rest of the team. Have a great weekend.